Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today after a snow day that didn't include much snow, and now there's a delay because it's chilly outside. So, Jim, welcome back. We missed you yesterday.
It is now sufficiently chilly for a delayed opening here in Authenticity Woods, because, as you know, you can't have school when it's cold. I exaggerate slightly. The statement from the school district today just said we are on a 2-hour delay because whatevs.
The adventures of Authenticity Woods never cease to entertain, but probably frustrating more for you. All right, good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. Today we start with the good, and Jim, this comes as virtually no surprise, but Scott Walker is launching his exploratory committee to explore a possible presidential bid in 2016. We knew this was likely after he won re-election in November pretty handily in Wisconsin. He did very well at the Freedom Summit in Iowa. A lot of people's concerns about his charisma were answered at that point. He's obviously got a very strong record in Wisconsin. He immediately went to work in 2011 taking on the unions, and he won. We should point out that'll obviously be the main thrust of his message, assuming he does run. And if he has anything to compare with Jeb Bush so far, the name of his committee is better: Our American Revival versus Right to Rise.
They do kind of all go through some sort of giant generic, you know, word word generator, you know, American renewal, growth, first, turnaround, rise, right, power, good, America. In fact, that's the name of my super PAC, Greg, or blah, 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 for short. Look, nothing terribly surprising here. It's kind of expected. Over on NRO's homepage, I kind of go through all the candidates, and I put Scott Walker in that top tier there. And one of the things you kind of recognize, and somebody had put through, and this wasn't necessarily directly my criteria, but it was kind of a good point, is that there aren't, for almost any other candidates, whether it's Ted Cruz, whether it's Jeb Bush, whether it's Mitt Romney, whether it's Rand Paul, you can find some portion of the Republican base that doesn't like that guy, that really, you know, has some beef with one of those guys. There aren't a lot of conservatives or Republicans who are upset with Scott Walker. Right. As you mentioned, a little bit of concern about whether he's sufficiently exciting or fired up or something like that. But nonetheless, look, this is a guy who has gotten big things done in his state, has taken everything the left has thrown at him. I don't think there's really any dispute about his toughness, his ability to take on any of that. He's just kind of a very likable guy with a solid record, indisputably conservative, but serious, and not somebody who's more than just a rabble-rouser. You put it all together, there's a great potential there, and we'll see how it plays out for him.
A lot of current and former governors either likely to get in or thinking about getting in. You've got Bush, of course. You've maybe Romney, Chris Christie. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. We talked about Bob Ehrlich, for heaven's sake, on the show yesterday when Andrew was in for you. And we'll get to Mike Pence here in the next martini, but when it comes to the grassroots, it would seem to think that the three that the grassroots would be most excited about would be Walker, your good friend Bobby Jindal, and potentially Rick Perry.
Yeah, and if you look in the comments section, you know, there are plenty of folks who think I am a terrible human being for not putting their guy in there. One of the things that I think kind of I put in there is, for example, there are two couple surprises there. One, people are saying, oh, you didn't put Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney in there, and each one of them, if they decide to run, it's going to have about $1 bazillion. I'm not quite as convinced that the same formula that worked in 2008 and 2012 will work in 2016, meaning that ultimately those were sort of endurance campaigns. You know, do you have the money? There were a decent number of Republicans who were not totally convinced that Mitt Romney was the right guy in 2012, but he had the money. And guys like Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry and all the rest didn't. Rick Perry got held back by a late start and the fact that he was on medication for back pain, which explains a little bit of his behavior on the trail and or his, let's just say, his memory skills in the debates. I think Perry was a better candidate than he showed last time around. I think he's one of the few guys I think will be better this time around. I also feel like there are a lot of conservatives who feel like, hey, we went along with the not-so-conservative choice of McCain in 2008. We saw that worked. We went along with Mitt Romney in this one. When the quote-unquote conservative choices out there are guys like Walker or Jindal or Rick Perry. I'd throw Marco Rubio in there. I know a lot of folks who are not fans of the Gang of Eight don't consider him conservative. Because as you all know, Greg, conservative is a synonym for agrees with me, right?
Of course.
Right. I mean, like, you know, that's basically, you know, moderate, you know, that all good adjectives mean this person agrees with me, and all bad adjectives mean this person disagrees with me. Basically, there are a lot of good options in this one. A lot of these guys last time around, you know, I mean, no offense to Herman Cain, but like they were not, you know, guys who either hadn't run before, or Michelle Bachmann, who'd never run outside of her house district, and I think just not ready for the rigors of a presidential campaign. I think if there's anything we've seen in these past two cycles, this is not just a big book tour. This is a, you know, you need a structure, an organization. I think all these guys have a much better chance of that than some of the contenders of the past. And thus, I don't think it'll be easy for the de facto top fundraiser, whether it's Bush or Romney or Chris Christie or one of these other guys, to just waltz into the nomination.
On to the bad martini now. This one is a courtesy of the Indianapolis Star. Governor Mike Pence is starting a state-run, taxpayer-funded news outlet that will make pre-written news stories available to Indiana media, as well as sometimes break news about his administration, according to documents obtained by the Indianapolis Star. Pence is planning in late February to launch Just In, I-N, capitalized, a website and news outlet that will feature stories and news releases written by state press secretaries and is being overseen by a former Indianapolis Star reporter, Bill McCleary. Jim, we've said many times on this program, we like Mike Pence. We think he did a good job in Congress. We think he's doing a pretty good job as governor. This smacks, it doesn't smack of it, it is state-run media, and I understand the frustration with media bias, but this can't be the answer.
Yeah, I mean, we've, you know, look, if there's anything that modern America has proved, it is utterly inappropriate for the state to be, you know, putting out its own news organizations. The proper role is for members of an administration to sleep with members of the media. That's the way it's supposed to work in America. No, you mentioned it. Like, you know, I mean, when I was putting together my list, by the way, we talked in that last segment, I added Pence to the most recent list. There's been some talk about him running for president. A lot of people love him from his years in Congress, and he was a rock-ribbed conservative then. You talk to some Indiana conservatives, and he's not quite the same guy he was back then. And something like this just seems like a terrible... I'm sorry, Greg, I'm just choking on the concept here. The idea that he doesn't realize how bad this looks is kind of unnerving. And there's nothing wrong with putting out press releases. There's nothing wrong with having communication, having people, you know, efforts, you know, putting up your Facebook page, all these efforts to get out information out there. But man, oh man, talk about your terrifically boneheaded move that just kind of reinforces every unnerving thought you've had about politicians' desire to control the news and stuff like that. You'd like to think also this would light a fire under the remaining state house reporters and state and local news reporters in Indiana. I think both of them are you know, probably feeling their oats today. There has been a real decline in the coverage of state governments, and the good folks at places like the Franklin Center have been trying to do their part to mitigate that that trend. I think if this goes forward, then maybe the Indiana Press Corps just needs to just close up shop and admit that they've been defeated, and that now the era of the First Amendment in the state of Indiana is over, because they've kind of conceded the job to the government itself.
I think the silver lining here is just how universal the criticism of this has been. There's been, I've seen no Republicans or conservatives who think this is a good idea. So it's nice to see that there's not some faction out there saying, well, this is a terrible idea, but if my guy likes it, then maybe it's okay. So we have not seen that, and I think that's good.
Yeah, you know, again, you'd like to think this was a floated trial balloon that will pop very quickly.
Yes. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And earlier in the week, we talked about the drone that crashed on the White House lawn early Monday morning. We now know more about how that happened, and it doesn't make the story any better. It does make it crazier, however. In a well-written lead here in the first few paragraphs in the New York Times, it was 42 degrees and raining lightly around 3 a.m. on Monday when an inebriated off-duty employee for a government intelligence agency decided it was a good time to fly his friend's drone, a 2-foot by 2-foot quadcopter that sells for hundreds of dollars and is popular among hobbyists. But officials say the plan was foiled, perhaps by wind or a tree, when the employee, who has not been named by the Secret Service or charged with a crime, lost control of the drone as he operated it from an apartment just blocks from the White House. He texted his friends, worried that the drone had gone down on the White House grounds, and then went to sleep. In the process of what officials describe as nothing more than a drunken misadventure, the employee managed to highlight another vulnerability in the protective shield that the Secret Service erects around the White House complex, because apparently the White House radar can sense missiles and planes, but not so much 2-foot by 2-foot drones.
Greg, I'm looking forward to the PSAs on this. Friends, don't let friends drink and drone. Always use a designated droner. People who feel that I run on in these segments probably think I'm the designated droner, Greg. But anyway, you're right. This takes what was once a kind of unnerving story and makes it kind of comical. Oh, don't worry. It's just a guy who does this for a living. For our, you know, we're in the very best of hands. But also, like, think about it. If a drunken guy can do this, you know, imagine what a sober terrorist could do. Right, Greg?
Right.
You know, kind of unnerving and all that stuff. Be interesting. I don't know if you necessarily want to come down on this guy like a ton of bricks. Everybody's done something perhaps not so wise with the amount of alcohol in them. But the idea that you'd, you know, get really hammered and say, hey, you know what I'm doing? I'm flying my drone over the White House. Or the fact that he said he didn't know it was over the White House. I mean, my first clue is that there's a big White House over there. just how far away is your drone when you're attempting to explain that? So we will see how this shakes out. My suspicion is this is not the last time we're going to see something flying over the White House in an unnerving manner.
I think you were right on Monday, Jim. I think the answer here is for the president to make an impassioned plea for shovel-ready jobs for the retractable dome.
There you go. And you just kind of press a button, zoop, it goes up, you know. Or, you know, we need to work on force field technology.
There you go. Tractor beams.
There you go. There you go. Because I think my understanding is that the company, by the way, has said that they're going to try to make it not work in the Washington, D.C. area. Another question will then will be, you know, will the next step be Manhattan? Will the next step be, you know, drones that can't function in urban areas, which, you know, might not be the worst idea.
Yeah, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over that. At least, you know, this guy didn't lose sleep at all, even though he landed on the White House lawn. Jim, good to have you back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.